Today we're going to talk about the pathological antagonist. These are people who want your ministry not to succeed. It's important that we understand who they are so that we can prayerfully and biblically hold ground as we pursue ministry and ministry training. So let's define it. Antagonism is the stimulus of a major disruption in a church caused by the mean-spirited attitude and behavior of an antagonist. Antagonism is usually defined as actively expressed opposition, hostility, or antipathy. So let's talk about the characteristics of a pathological antagonist. The arguments of a pathological antagonist are usually founded on little or terribly misrepresented evidence. Some common logical fallacies employed are pettifogging, that's quibbling over petty details, offering strong proof of irrelevant points, extension, exaggerating the position of one's opponents, argumentum ad ignorantem, making an accusation that cannot be disproved, and then claiming that this makes it true. From my experience with a clergy killer, I would add another fallacy, outright lying or falsification. As antagonist, in his attempt to make the kill, will take certain facts and twist them so that they are blatantly false when presented. In time, he convinces himself that his twisted facts are true. I remember one antagonist that would do that constantly and give half-truths until the time of making the kill. Two, I have often observed that a pathological antagonist will initiate trouble. This person is hypersensitive to any word or action, even trivial oversights, so that he takes these as personal attacks and responds aggressively, failing to speak to him in the hall, not asking him to pray at a meeting, not getting his approval in advance for an idea you wish to propose to the church, or not recognizing him sufficiently before the congregation are examples of behavior that will cause his antagonism to flare up. He will take these as evidence that you are against him. I remember one antagonist, if somehow or other I did not get the nuance of what he was saying from a committee meeting and I missed something, would just set himself against me. An antagonist also is someone whose demands will never be satisfied. It became clear to me, Guy Greenfield wrote, that a pathological antagonist is never satisfied. His demands are insatiable. No amount of accommodation on the minister's part will ever suffice. Attempts at appeasement will not calm him down, but will encourage him to make more demands. This person will fight until there is nothing left but debris. He is persistent and unstoppable. Four, the pathological antagonist will lead a campaign of attack on the minister. This person is not trying to give constructive criticism, even if some valid points are offered. His goal is nothing short of control, no matter what it may cost the minister or the church. The antagonist is so full of rage that he feels compelled to attack the enemy, that is the minister, until he is destroyed, terminated, eliminated from the scene. This person probably has a God problem. He feels some deep-seated anger toward God. For some reason out of his past experiences, because it is difficult to show anger directly toward God, the pathological antagonist chooses the minister, the man of God, as his target. Sometimes his anger is guilt-driven, possibly due to a hidden sin, such as an extramarital affair, for example. His antagonism is an attempt to move the spotlight off his own sin onto another. Therefore, the attack is a smokescreen to cover his own moral indiscretions. Now, these are those things that I found with antagonists over the years, that there really was something that was a smokescreen. And at the time, you would never know it, but later on, it becomes clear. Number five. It was obvious to me, Greenfield says, that the attacking behavior of the pathological antagonist is selfish in nature. Often he will seize on some spiritual goal or objective, such as the good of the church, its work in the community, and pretend that what he is fighting for is something higher than himself. This person is rarely interested in authentic spiritual goals. If one rationale no longer works to his advantage, he will devise another, such as, we have to now keep the youth from leaving the church. His stated reasons for opposition are a ruse for his own hidden agenda. What he really wants is power, control, status, and authority. Number 6, the attacks of the pathological antagonist are destructive rather than constructive. The antagonist's actions divide a church. They do not pull people together. My experience concurs with Huck when he writes, show me a divided and strife-torn church, and I will show you a congregation that has one or more antagonists in its midst. So let's talk about what types of antagonists are out there. One Greenfield classifies as the hardcore antagonists. Hardcore antagonists are seriously disturbed people, even psychotic, that is, out of touch with reality. Their psychosis is of a paranoid type, which is not easily detected. These people can appear to be normal either some or most of the time. They have incredible persistence and extreme desire to make trouble, even enjoying their sadistic inclinations. One can easily spot one of these individuals by the smirk often seen on his face, especially noticeable after he makes a critical or snide comment about the pastor in a meeting of church leaders. You know, one of the antagonists that I noticed was an antagonist at a previous church this person was going to. Then this person came to my church that I was pastoring at, and the same patterns persisted at my church as were persistent in the other church. Hardcore antagonists are identical to Regigger's clergy killer types. They will go to any length and expense to wreak havoc on their targets. You know, I remember one who, right before he launched a major attack into something that I was leading, gave a $25,000 gift to the church. And there was somehow, you know, he wanted to, in a sense, lay the groundwork for his platform. As far as they are concerned, they are fighting a jihad, a holy war, and the minister is the enemy. They believe they are doing God a favor. The inner rage is baptized in the aura of holy zeal. Without a doubt, the hardcore antagonist is slippery and dangerous. He cannot be reasoned with. The Apostle Paul may have had this kind of person in mind when he warned the Ephesian elders about savage wolves infiltrating the congregation and not sparing the flock. Greenfield also talks about major antagonists. Most major antagonists are not as severely disturbed as hardcore ones, but they will at times demonstrate similar behaviors. If the hardcore antagonist cannot be reasoned with because of emotional instability, the major antagonist refuses to be reasoned with. Reason is within his capacity, but he knows that if he uses it, he may be defeated or proved wrong. So to protect his position, he simply refuses to be reasoned with, and his demands are insatiable. The individual probably has a character or personality disorder seen in the heavy load of anger he carries about, together with an overwhelming lust for power. He is not psychotic or out of touch with reality, but his personality problems are obviously deep-seated. A major antagonist does not want to change, since change is threatening to him. He has built a defensive wall around himself labeled, I am right, I am doing what is right. Now in the Bible, these sorts of antagonists do appear. The role, danger, possibility of antagonists in the church are nothing new in church history. Even the Bible, many examples can be found. There is the classic precedence of Judas Iscariot, who sought vigorously to deter Jesus from his primary mission. A pathological antagonist will always betray the divine mission of the church, even in the name of God. Greenfield talked about Jack, who invoked the name of God to justify his behavior to eliminate the minister from office. Betrayal, though, comes in many shapes and sizes. The biblical explanation that Satan entered into Judas called Iscariot. It is not incidental that the basic meaning of Satan is accuser, which is the primary role of the antagonist. The Apostle Paul had antagonists. There is also precedent of the Apostle Paul's antagonist at Corinth, who is unnamed, who were very distracting to his ministry. The action of these persons, which are often identified by scholars as legalistic Judaizers, served as the background for chapters 10, 11, 12, and 13 of 2 Corinthians. These antagonists infiltrated the church and sought to discredit Paul's message and ministry. He referred to them as super apostles, 11 verse 5, also 11, 12 verse 11. Having just suggested that their work seemed to be patterned for the work of the deceptive serpent in the Garden of Eden, the results of which would lead to their thoughts away from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. This deception is called a different spirit and a different gospel than the one received through Paul's ministry. The antagonist's message were of another Jesus than the one we proclaimed. Wow! That many chapters in the Bible about antagonists? If the Apostle Paul spent that much time, be assured that Satan would still try to raise up antagonists against your ministry, against your future ministry. Moreover, Paul calls these boasting antagonists false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. Then he directly identifies them as ministers of Satan, who disguise themselves as angels of light and ministers of righteousness, but falsely so. In a spirit of stern judgment, the apostle states, their end will match their deeds. He goes on to observe that these antagonists have made slaves of the Corinthian believers, preyed upon them, taken advantage of them, put on airs, given them a slap in the face. Paul even chides the Corinthian saints for not having commended him, that is, defend him in the face of these antagonists. So if you're a pastor and you've been antagonized, take heart. Even the Apostle Paul had his antagonists, and he was antagonized without defense. In addition, Paul is fearful when he returns to Corinth that he will find the church embroiled in a quarreling, jealousy, anger, selfishness, slander, gossip, conceit, and disorder as a consequence of their having followed and supported these antagonists. Paul implies that his ministry had been for building up and not for tearing down, an implication that the work of the antagonists had been for tearing down. He concludes by appealing to his readers to live together in agreement and peace with the promise that the God of love and peace will be with you. Another biblical precedent of antagonism is the case of diatribes, mentioned in the Apostle Paul's third letter. John characterizes this antagonist as one who likes to put himself first, who does not acknowledge authority. John accuses diatribes of spreading false charges against us, and not content with those charges, he refuses to welcome his friends, fellow believers, and even prevents those who do not want to do so, and expels them from the church. John then concludes with the appeal, brothers, do not imitate what is evil, but imitate what is good. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. So in conclusion, those of us in ministry, those of us who are preparing for ministry, who have dealt with pathological antagonists, cannot find a more descriptive portrayal of their work than in John's gospel here. John's letter, harsh, cruel, caustically critical, unloving, unkind, deceptive, disruptive, divisive, these persons are clearly not of God. As one of my lay leaders, Greenfield says, supporters said to me, these men are like cancerous tumors in one's body. The only way to deal with them is surgery. You know, that's true. How do you deal with an antagonist? You know, we've talked about various things you can do, but you know, one of the things I've learned over the years is if I see someone that's an antagonist, I will bring it up to my elders as a possibility. And sometimes I'll even, like in a church planting, if someone comes to your church, you can almost sense, are they going to be a very draining person? Are they going to be an antagonist? And if you see that their vision for who they are and the vision of who you are not in alignment, if you see that they're lusting for power, if you see, even in the early church planting, that they don't like your style, you know, in my sense, you know, I'm somebody who, you know, I was a dyslexic. In fact, I'm still a dyslexic. I'm not that perfect in things. I say things wrong. And there are times when somebody, when I was a church planter, would come and they like things perfect. They like things well in order. But they like some of the people that come along, so they'll come for a while. And I will sense that more and more, they don't like just who I am. So one thing I will say is, hey, this is who I am. I make mistakes in my speaking sometimes, and sometimes, you know, I'm not that perfect, and all of these things. And, you know, if you're looking for that, go down to First Church down the block. They're really, you know, is a church that, you know, dots all the I's and crosses all the T's. And sometimes I'll even encourage someone to leave. But again, that's a church planting scenario. For many of you in ministry, who you have is who you have. And the best thing is to always be diligent, to prayerfully look at a strategy of dealing with the psychological antagonists, the pathological antagonists, the sinful antagonists, whatever you want to call them, that you are more and more able to understand how to lead. Now, if you get under the bus, so to speak, and if you get sidetracked by a pathological antagonist, you will not be the first. Again, don't take yourself too serious. Be one who has resiliency. If you leave that church for whatever reason, you made some mistakes and you didn't know how to deal with that, learn quickly. But don't necessarily leave ministry. If there's a pathological issue that needs to be addressed in you as both a student or a pastor someday, address it. But come back strong if you have to leave. But here's my last encouragement. Most of the time, none of this would be that big of a deal. In 30 years, four pathological antagonists came into my ministry. And each of them tested me and actually made me stronger. Each of these pathological antagonists taught me something. You know, they didn't teach me themselves, but God taught me something through the whole experience. I do believe that some of these things are tests from God. He allows the spiritual warfare. He allows our test to really know who we are and know how we will lead in the church of our Lord Jesus Christ. So, as important for people smart in ministry skills, all of these presentations are, don't get too freaked out by all of this. Don't get too upset. Just know that you probably will get attacked, and seek to be on board with those in your church so that your ministry can be fruitful and long.